to our meeting here. And I think it would be appropriate for us to start with the introduction before we get to apologies and hand over to the opening remarks on behalf of the department. Very often we have unfamiliar faces, and we forget that we have to do introduction from time to time, so that we know who's here from which office and their responsibility in the particular offices. Can we quickly start with that? We are still preparing the apologies here. The introduction.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Robert Nkuna. I'm the Director General of the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Omega Shalembe. I'm the Deputy DG responsible for SOE oversight at DTPS.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Rendani Museta. I'm the Chief Director responsible for VVI and CETA at the SOC branch at the DTPS.
Good morning, honorable colleagues. My name is Vincent Mpapoli. I'm head of department, CETA Legal Services.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Sipho Abafunani Nangobera, and I'm head of department for broadband strategy at CETA.
Sorry, I didn't hear the end of it. You're full strong.
Good morning, Mr. Evans, PMG.
Okay, I think with members here, we're just permanent faces here. We don't have any new members. These are the members that you knew from the beginning of the term. And as we're going to listen to the opening remarks and the presentation as a whole, we will listen with caution and we'll take into consideration what the department has committed to in the past as far as the plans and their implementation is concerned. And usually when we get presentations, we look against, you know, the presentations that were done before and take it from there. We've also browsed, you know, through the report that was presented in 2015. And not for us to go through the minutes and everything, but just to browse on issues which are relevant to today's presentation and check what has been achieved by the department ever since our engagement till today. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members, colleagues. Once again, we thank you for this opportunity. Some of us just arrived from Durban, and from here a number of us are going to Durban. Chairperson, we all decided to come because we value our interaction with the committee, the council of the committee. So I personally am currently presiding in a meeting of senior officials of SADC before in preparation for the meeting of ministers which will happen on Thursday. But decided to leave the other colleagues to proceed with that so that we can interact with the committee as we value the counsel that we get from the committee from time to time. We have also added some of our state entities to join us so that we can enrich the discussions that we're going to have with yourselves. We have USASA, as you have heard, and CETA. which are some of the entities that are affected one way or another by what we're trying to do. Chairperson, the approach is to make sure that when we talk about rationalization, we are not worse off at the end of it all. It must improve the efficiency and service delivery, and that none of the affected state entities should be worse off as a result of the endeavor that we are taking. So the reason why we need to bring the entities on board is to ensure that whatever we do does not disadvantage any entity, but strengthen the entities in so far as it concerns governance and service delivery. Now, previously, the focus of this exercise was on undertaking an audit to identify aspects that can be integrated into the kind of entities that we want to create. Now, from there, now in our APP, we have moved a step forward in terms of saying that these are the broad parameters in terms of what we want to do. We want to create a state IT entity, a sustainable one, a viable one at that, but also on the other end, we want to create a state infrastructure company. So at least we've moved one step forward. So the first was to audit what can be grouped together, and now we're talking about how now to move into the creation of the two entities. Without much ado, Chairperson, I will ask DDG Shelembe to lead us with the presentation, and all of us will be available to take the questions as they arise. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, DG. Good morning again, honorable members and colleagues. I'm going to run through the presentation which we have prepared for this session. Under the contents, I sort of indicate what we are going to be touching on. Firstly, is an introduction remarks, really, which traces the origins of the rationalization process. And then we go closer to the policy imperatives as captured in several documents. We then skim through the economic case for broadband rollout. After that, we will go through the capability assessments, the audit that the DG refers to, and then we will present our approach to rationalization, the implementation roadmap. And then we look at the legislative and regulatory considerations that we need to take into account as we traverse this field. And then we look at the implementation plan, and then we conclude. As an introduction, then, we say the rationalization process of ICT SOEs is informed by government policy positions as pronounced in, one, the Presidential Review Committee report on SOEs, the National Development Plan, SA Connect, and the Integrated ICT Policy White Paper. All these documents essentially indicate the need for alignment of SOEs in order to achieve the developmental objectives and aspirations of South Africa. Therefore, as a department, we aim through rationalization to harmonize available enterprise capabilities so that they can be streamlined for efficiency in the best interest of service delivery. I then trace the origins of these pronouncements in the several documents that we refer to. The PRC report refers to the alignment of SOCs at all spheres of government in order to achieve developmental objectives and aspirations of South Africa. It also calls for the continued in-depth micro-assessment of SOCs to assist the merging of many entities. The NDP, particularly in the ICT chapter, talks about the need to review the market structure, that we need to analyze the benefits and cost of infrastructure duplication, and the need for a common carrier network with possibilities of a structural separation of vertically integrated incumbent. SA Connect also talks about the need to ensure that ICT SOCs achieve better coordination through the clear definition of roles, the integration of planning, monitoring and evaluation, and the development of institutional capabilities. And lastly, the white paper states that all state-owned companies and entities within the GTPS portfolio should be rationalized in line with the proposal in the National Broadband Plan as informed by SA Connect. We have looked at the emerging evidence about the importance of a broadband rollout, the anecdotal narrations from various reports such as the World Bank, World Economic Forum, and IMF reports regarding the impact of broadband growth, which indicates that each 10 percentage points of broadband penetration results in 1.21% increase in per capita GDP in developed countries, and a moderately higher percentage in developing countries of 1.38 increase in GDP growth. Therefore, we see investment in broadband rollout as something that will put the country on its way to achieve increased economic growth and improved service delivery. We therefore say it is important that the ICT sector plays its critical role of ensuring that South Africa has an improved infrastructure and innovative technologies. The NDP recognizes and notes ICTs as a critical enabler of economic activities in an increasingly networked world. Not only do the ICTs provide important direct opportunities for manufacturing, service provision, and job creation, but they also contribute to economic development through enhanced communication and information flow that improves productivity and efficiency. Therefore, given the immense potential benefits of broadband, we say it's fundamental that governments, especially in developmental states such as South Africa, play an active role in rolling out broadband infrastructure and services to the full benefit of all citizens. The DG has mentioned that we then did the audits of the capabilities of or assessments of our SOCs that we concluded in the financial year 2016-17, and we understood that there are available duplicated resources and infrastructure, again duplications on mandates, as well as that there is a base to craft a new direction that leads to efficiency. The assessment outcome shows that the current state of affairs includes infrastructure duplication, inefficiencies, poor coordination, and wastage of scarce financial resources. When we look closer to duplicated services, we find cases of poor governance and a lack of clear understanding of the mandates in the context of a developmental state. The funding mechanism of SOCs, of SOEs are weak or very weak, leading to poor performance in the execution of their socio-economic mandate. As a result of duplication, there are a lot of inefficiencies and lack of effectiveness and wastage of scarce financial resources. We also note that there is a serious lack of coordination among SOEs that should otherwise complement each other. So our assessment, we're saying the DTPS portfolio of SOEs constitutes the immediate scope in which the DTPS rationalization project will be focusing. But yet we are also cognizant of other ICT capabilities that reside outside the DTPS, in enterprises such as Eskom, Transnet, Sunrail, and PRASA, all of which form part of a broader government. The main objective of the SOE rationalization exercise, as we see it, is to move away from the current fragmented mode of service delivery to a consolidated approach with the idea to classify entities into two broad categories, as the DG has just indicated. The first entity will deal with the consolidation of the broadband infrastructure entities to form the state ICT infrastructure company or the National Broadband Network Company. The second entity will be the formation of the ICT services related company or the state IT company. The implementation of this project will set a foundation for successful execution of digitized business processes and robust technology infrastructure. When we look at the roadmap, at first we are looking at the consolidation of our infrastructure entities such as BBI and Centec that will form the core of the network, broadband network, national broadband network company. And as part of phase two, we are looking at access agreements between the company and non-ICT entities, as we have indicated. So with phase one, we're looking at BBI and Centec merging to form the national broadband network. And it is considered to have the following benefits. They are both infrastructure companies providing carrier services through their ECNS licenses. We are looking at disaggregating the value chain and extracting value for the end user. We are looking at facilitating competition, particularly at access and services components, reducing broadband rollout and services costs. And this will provide Centec with much needed broadband capacity for signal distribution. There's a diagrammatic presentation in that slide which shows how we are looking at consolidating those two entities. As part of phase two, we are talking about access agreements between the NBN company and others. 2A, or the first part of two, is access agreements between the NBN company and non-ICT SOEs such as Eskom, Transnet, PRASA and SANRA. The second part of phase two includes access agreements between the company and provincial and local government broadband networks. And the third phase is access agreements between the company and the private sector. And again, there's a diagrammatic presentation of that. Then when we look at SA Connect, essentially, it's looking at the infrastructure company that will facilitate government-to-government and government-to-business, as well as government-to-individual or government-to-citizen. And we're saying an enforceable business case needs to be developed for government to become an anchor tenant to ensure meaningful government-to-government, government-to-citizen, and government-to-business engagement with the supply of its own infrastructure network through rationalized SOC. Contrary to the current duplicated mandate, Centec and BBI services are meant to be complementary, not that complementary, excuse the spelling. BBI, as a long-distance entity, can provide high-speed bandwidth capacity to South Africa Connect identified districts as follows. Direct fiber connectivity in those districts or government facilities where there is fiber rollout, or alternatively fiber to the Centec base station. Centec, with its microwave and satellite capabilities, can provide last mile connectivity to the districts or government facilities. Also, as we said, Centec can provide broadcasting services through BBI's fiber for digital broadcasting. We're saying the Centec-BBI merger can enable rural connectivity due to the presence of Centec's high sites in most of these areas. We show the diagrammatic again, a picture of the collaboration between BBI, fiber, and Centec, a microwave and satellite, to reach inaccessible areas. We then present the end-to-end SA Connect by ICT SOCs, where we include CETA, BBI, Centec, and others. CETA, in terms of the diagram, provides internet connectivity and access to government applications. BBI aggregates ICT network infrastructure. Centec provides the satellite, microwave, last-mile connectivity, and others will play terrestrial last-mile connectivity, which will be wired or wireless. What do we envisage will be the focus of the IT state IT company? It should focus on research and development, innovation, localization, which will include local procurement and open source, cyber security, procurement of IT products and services, e-government implementation, as well as IT services and management. The considerations from a legislative and regulatory point of view, we are saying there are legislations or legislative and regulatory aspects which need to be considered with regard to the implementation of the National Broadband Network Company and the IT Company. General legislative and regulatory considerations include Companies Act or Corporate Law, the Public Finance Management Act, the ECA in terms of licensing. All affected SOC's mandates and legislations will be reviewed in line with the rationalization project. Competition aspects to give effect to the measures, and lastly, the labor relations issues. We are saying we will do a further detailed legal assessment to ensure compliance to all relevant laws and regulations. Subject to cabinet approval of the business cases, we will start work on the two bills for submission to cabinet and later on to parliament. The implementation plan includes the analysis of SOC funding legislation, development of phase one roadmap, performing due diligence processes for phase one implementation, development of the mandates for the state ICT infrastructure company, as well as that of the state IT company. Explore critical levers like funding, legislative and regulatory affairs in detail. And then we seek cabinet approval on the principles that will guide the implementation of the ICT SOC rationalization project by the end of the third quarter. And then after that, we will do detailed legislative development. In conclusion, we are saying in line with the PRC report and the NDP, the DTPS through its ICT SOE's rationalization project seeks to achieve consolidation of ICT resources in order to capitalize on available technology capabilities and convergence of available resources to deliver robust digitized services across government. Having considered the severity of the challenges raised, which includes, amongst others, infrastructure duplication, wastage and scarce financial resources, and so on, we are determined to move from the current fragmented mode of service delivery to a more consolidated approach by creating an NBN company and a state IT company. That's the end of my presentation. Thank you very much.
Yes, maybe in conclusion to indicate, Chairperson, that in terms of in terms of our APP, the plan is to go to cabinet in quarter three. So it means that in quarter three we'll be going to cabinet for approval of the model that has been presented in its detail. Now, post that, we need to work on the legislative program. Now, in our previous presentations, we indicated that we already have about seven laws that we have drafted that are coming here. Now, these laws are not part of what we have referred to, which means that if you include these laws, then you are talking about nine laws. And what we will ask, I know we have a presentation in October that's going to look at the legislative program. Now, we will be guided by yourselves in terms of how many laws can we take between now and the end of the term. So based on the guidance that we receive from yourself, then we'll see which laws to prioritize. So I just wanted to indicate that these laws that we are referring to here are not part of the seven that we have already indicated. Let me also indicate that there is work that USASA has been doing in broadband connectivity. Now, some of the sites that USASA has supported will have to be integrated into this project. so that we don't experience a challenge whereby there is connectivity and no one, when USASA becomes a development fund, no one takes responsibility of that infrastructure connectivity. So we have a plan in place to make sure that that does not happen, where you have infrastructure just idling and no one is responsible for that infrastructure. So we'll also manage that transaction. Just wanted to add those.
Thank you for the additional information. We'll now hand over to members to raise questions or comments. Also, as I've said in the opening, that we're considering the fact that you have committed to yourself in the past. They may be raised again in this presentation. Looking at our previous reports, members have indicated a number of very important issues, but they will make a follow-up on that. I'll leave it to them. Thank you.
Yeah. Chairperson, thank you and good morning to everyone. The presentation that we have just received looks good. However, just like any other plan, for example, slide 10, they talk of phase one consolidation of BBI and FinTech and phase two access to. There are no time frames. It's just a sentence. You don't even know when they are going to do that. And you don't even get a sense of how long will it take to migrate from phase one to phase two. It just seems like that. Are of concern to us, because then we like to get a feel and a sense that these things really is going to be done. And one way of making sure that these things happen is by putting time frames so that we get a sense of that. And that seems to be lacking. I hear you are saying you're planning to go to the cabinet by the end of the third quarter and so on. And things like that, but the rest, there are no time frames. And secondly, you also indicate that you have undertaken some assessments. But what I would like to know about this assessment, was this assessment done by the department or did you outsource that? And again, as part of your findings, I would just want to know if. Were there any indication of legislation or government failures identified? And if so, how will that be sorted out? And finally, I just want to know if the department is aware of the processes being undertaken by the Department of Public Enterprise to introduce a shareholder management bill to bring all SOCs under one legislative framework, and whether this rationalization project is not preemptive of the above processes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, I want to align myself with the sentiments expressed by Honourable Fuela, concerned about lack of clarity, deadlines, periods, etc. You know, DG, 2 years ago, to be exact, on the 23rd of June 2015, we had a presentation about SOC rationalization. We then heard that there was a rationalization steering committee, that there was a technical team that was looking at the details consisting of the different entities, etc., etc. In that meeting, and thanks to the minutes kept by Parliamentary Monitoring Committee, we actually can refer to exactly what we deliberated on during that meeting. You will really pardon us if we say what we have had here this morning was the rehash of the presentation that we had 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago. And again, we don't have any deadlines. We complained at that stage that there was not adequate information. You know, what is the anticipated time frame to get everybody on board? How do you untangle or unscramble the egg to make a new omelette, etc.? At least we now have clarity about the two major entities that will be driving broadband. That is good. That is good that we have that. But still, we're no clearer to deadlines, timelines, etc. We, you know, if it is true that this is a very necessary process, and we believe it is a necessary process, because here you've listed the shortcomings, and also during that time they listed the shortcomings, why that rationalization process was necessary. Waste of resources, limited resources, duplication of mandates or overreach of mandates, etc., etc. So all of that was is old news. We've already had that. But then clearly I find it very difficult to understand why this is not seen as an important process to push through in legislation as well. If you're saying to us you have 7 bills coming to us, we will just have to work longer hours and push it through. But if it's necessary to do it, then it must be done. But then we must have a commitment from the department that they will also now move to get things done in time. It is not fair to make us just receive repeats of earlier presentations, and then in the end, towards the end of the period of the term of office of this parliament, then pushing through legislation. Our function is, we are legislators, and once weaknesses have been identified, it's the department's responsibility to present a tangible plan with deadlines, with key deliverables, when, what, where. We are in Parliament's third term. I understand that you've maybe referred to the financial third term, which is the period leading up to the end of the year that you will be presenting to Cabinet. But so often we've also been disappointed that you didn't reach it and it was not in time for the agenda of Cabinet or whatever, whatever. And in that process, valuable time is lost. Money, public resources is lost. The time has come for us all to put in the extra mile, to get things that are not functioning properly, to correct it. I really am, if I must say, Chairperson, I'm disappointed. I'm really utterly disappointed that we still have broad overview and we don't have the detail in the plan presented to us. Thank you, Chairperson. Even the capability assessment, that was done long time ago. So it's not new to us. We need tangible time frames. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered by Honorable Zwane.
Honorable Kwerena.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I just say on slide 4, you under the heading NDP, you're talking about an analysis of benefits and cost of infrastructure duplication. I just want to know, was that done? And when was it done? And, you know, if it was done, is there a report with regard to that one available? And then on slide 8, yourself really picture a very grim picture about SOEs. You know, you're telling us really that there is the problem. Now, Honorable Killian referred to the report of 2015. And that's 2 years down the line. Now, in IT terms, 2 years is like 10 years. So that's a serious thing. And I, you know, if you haven't seen the minutes of 2015, go and read it yourself, and then you will see how less progress we have seen in 2 years. Now, my question to you is, are you happy with the improvement that we have seen? Secondly, if you are not happy, what's the problem? It might be not, maybe sometimes not the officials, it might be the politicians. I'm looking towards the ministry, but there is a problem here. Is it a duplication of the two departments? Is it the silos we've seen more and more and people are not working together? What are the problems? You must talk to us. You know, Parliament can assist, but if you keep quiet and you come back every year with a sort of same report, little bit of progress, you know, we will fight with you and maybe we're not fighting with the correct people.
Honourable Mackenzie.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Good morning and thanks for the presentation. I must I must echo my colleague regarding timelines. If you just come with, and we've said this as a committee before, if you just come with presentations without timelines, they're meaningless because it doesn't hold you to anything. It doesn't hold the department to anything. It doesn't give us an idea of where we are or how far along the way this project is. So please, when you do presentations, make sure that we have very clear timelines set out, Mr. Shilembe, so we can monitor. You know, perhaps as politicians, because our election is very term-focused, we only have 5 years to get the job done, whereas perhaps our professional civil service has somewhat longer to spend in their positions. So we are very, very time-conscious, and I specifically, as a first-term MP, am very conscious of the time and the work that this department has to do, which, in my view, is the most important of all the state-owned or state departments, and yet it's the least resourced. That's just a view. So those timelines are critical. Then in terms of CENTEC, I'm not sure if CENTEC are represented here today. No. How much... perhaps Dr. Mahabi could step in and just assist. You know, I see you more than I see my own wife, I'm just saying. It's not my wife's fault either. The broadband capacity for CENTEC, how important is that terrestrial broadband network, that fiber network to CENTEC for the business that they do? I'm just keen to know that. Then the NBN Co. and the WOAN. I mean, if you think that SOC rationalization is all about getting rid of duplication, about maximizing economy of scale, about improving efficiency, we still have a WOAN floating around there somewhere. Now, how does the WOAN fit in with the NBN? I would imagine that it's a very clear and logical fit if you're going to go the WOAN route. Then in terms of last-mile connectivity, using CENTEC for last-mile connectivity, as you said in your presentation, we've had lots of presentations before the committee where we talk about empowerment of SMMEs, small businesses, enabling black-owned businesses to access the ICT space. And one of the, I have the impression, anyway, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Nkrumah, but one of the ideas I have is that the easiest and the simplest way to get black-owned ICT SMMEs into this space is with that laying of fiber, because, you know, it's a quick startup that you can put, and a lot of people are participating in that. So if you now have CENTEC doing the last-mile connectivity, are you not then conflicting with the ICT SMME development program that you would like to introduce? Don't you see a conflict there? And just one other small thing. My pen ran out of ink. Not too easy to find. Here we are. Yes, you said seek cabinet approval on the principles that will guide, sorry, on page 19 of your presentation. Seek cabinet approval on the principles that will guide the implementation of the ICT rationalization project by the end of the third quarter. That's the end of September. So that timeline, am I right? It's the end of September, the third quarter of this year.
No.
Thank you to financial year. Okay, thank you. So you still have time then. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Honourable Shee.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would just like to remind everyone what the aim of SA Connect is. and it's to implement a vision of seamless network of networks that by 2030 will make broadband universally available at a cost and quality that meets the needs of citizens and informal businesses and the public sector. What you have presented us with today is a broadband monopoly, and I just want to know, do you see this this new company as being servicing, connecting state entities only, clinics, libraries, schools, government offices, at all three spheres of government? Will you consider selling off surplus space on this network to the private sector companies around the country? Will you then, what I'm asking is will you be competing with the private sector? Also, I see no role here at all for the private sector. You're cutting them out of the business altogether, I assume, so that they will no longer be able to bid for government business. I'd like some clarity on that. How is this going to be funded? You talk about the raising of the levy and that requires new legislation, which is the Digital Development Fund. How are you going to finance this? Obviously I also wanted to know the links with the wireless network as well. Because I believe that if the aim of this network is to roll out broadband connectivity to the entire country by 2030 at an affordable price, you're not going to do it. It's going to take you 5 to 6 years to get this thing established, would it not be better, more feasible, more cost affordable to actually sell off Centec and Broadband Infraco to the private sector and get them to do it? Because they have the capacity, they have the skills, they have the money. And then you buy services from them. I know there's an argument for having your own network that you think is more affordable, but frankly, this is going to fail. I don't think that you're going to do it. Perhaps you can convince me otherwise regarding timelines, but we're looking at a monstrous monopoly here of broadband connectivity to government sector, which is unaffordable and slow. For those that are too young to remember when Telkom was the monopoly then, and obviously we only had voice at that stage, so it was a much simpler system. But when Telkom had a monopoly, the waiting list for a landline to be connected in Johannesburg was 2 years. You couldn't get a phone in Joburg in less than 2 years. And houses, private sector houses were sold on an illegal condition that the phone stayed connected. So the phone directory was inaccurate because people sold their houses with the phone. If you didn't guarantee to leave your phone connected, you wouldn't sell your house. That is how desperate people were when they had to deal with the monopoly. So please, let's not go back that route. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I hand over to the department for responses?
Thanks, Chairperson and members for the insightful questions. I'll take just a couple of questions and my colleagues will also come in. Now, in terms of phase two, Chairperson, which deals with the integration of the non-ICT SOCs, that process, in fact, has started. I have written to DPE and the Department of Transport to sit with us to discuss their role in the rollout of SA Connect. Now, in the letter inviting them to the meeting, we have asked them to bring on board their state-owned entities. So there is a focus, there is already engagement that is focused on the rollout of SA Connect. That may not necessarily be about rationalization in a structural sense of the way, but the focus now is to say that even when this discussion is unfolding, there is a need for us to work with them. Now, the Department of Public Enterprises will bring ESCOM and Transnet. The Department of Transport is going to bring BRASA and SANRAL, which have a broadband capacity. So in the next week or so, we will be sitting in the meeting discussing the implementation of SA Connect as it currently stands. So in a way, that process has started. We have indicated that we are going to cabinet in quarter three, And if we get a cabinet approval, what will then follow is then the due diligence in terms of the assets that are going to now be rationalized, that we can do in quarter four. And depending on our discussion with yourselves on the legislative program, we will then have to factor that. I must indicate that the drafting is taking place within the department. In fact, even the assessment was done by the department working with state-owned entities to make their own inputs. So in short, when the question is raised by the about time frames, quarter three we get a cabinet approval, and post that we then do the necessary due diligence in terms of the kind of assets that need to be integrated. And then depending on our discussion with yourselves, we also then roll out the legislative program, which may overlap maybe to 2019-2020, given the fact that we have to do the CS also with the Department of Public Enterprises. So that will also... So the condition as to when are we going to finalize the legislative program, there are two issues there. First is what can we take with this committee? So we are still waiting for that discussion to happen with this committee in early October in terms of the kind of legislation that we can, or the number of bills that can be taken. Now, the legislative program, I've indicated that we have capacity, because in the case of the state IT company, all what we then is going to do is an amendment to the current CETA Act, so we can do that, and CETA can assist us in the crafting of the kind of legislative framework based on what the cabinet would have decided should happen. I speak advisedly, Chair, when I say CETA can assist us. I know it's the responsibility of the department to do so. But I'm merely saying that we can get a lot of information also from interacting with the kind of entities that exist now. Because one of the things that we want to do is to make sure that no entity is worse off as a result of this undertaking. So that can be expedited. I've answered the question around who did the assessment and indicated that the assessment was done internally by the department. Now, was there a clear legislative failure in terms of what we currently have? Inevitably, when you have two entities with separate legislation, they cannot cooperate outside of the PFMA. It means that whenever they have to work together, also they have to contract each other. So the synergies become so commercial even when you are looking at interventions to promote universal access. So in a sense that you have got two companies owned by the state doing the same thing, then you are likely to have a problem in the way they relate to each other, because it's regulated also in terms of the PFMA. The SOC bill that's raised by Honorable Suela, we are part of that process, and we participate in the IMC. Our view is that there are certain entities that exist not to necessarily generate money, but to assist the country in driving a developmental mandate. Now, we may need to make a distinction perhaps in that discussion in terms of which entities must go and which entities must remain within the portfolio. Our understanding is that the entities that belong to the portfolio essentially exist in pursuit of a developmental mandate, and it may not be advisable to remove them from the portfolio and relocate them to other structures. So, but we are making our input in that discussion to say what are we going to do with entities that belong to us that exist, for example, in the case of USASA. If you remove USASA to be housed in another department, what is the implication of doing that, given the fact that its existence derives from pursuing a developmental mandate? I'll skip the question around, let me not skip it, on the presentation of 23rd June 2015, that what we're discussing here is not a new discussion, and I want to accept that indeed, to an extent, it is not a new discussion. But in part, this process was interrupted by the formulation of policy itself. So the whole process of finalizing the white paper had a bearing on the conclusion of this process. And I say this advisably without making any excuse that we could have communicated better in terms of the sequencing of processes. So that when something new creeps in, there must be accountability on our side in terms of saying, how are we going to claw back and still manage to do what we need to do in a short space. A report on infrastructure duplication. I think the first point that the DDG indicated is that this arises, number one, from the NDP, which enjoins us to undertake a process of harmonizing state entities. And number two, the presidential review process did that, and the ICT policy also dealt with the same issue. So a number of policy prescripts have dealt with this matter. On the issue of broadband capacity of CENTEC, CENTEC recently went on a tender, I'm not sure where it is, to seek a supplier to provide a fixed broadband network, you know, fiber network, to link their radio stations. So CENTEC has just gone on tender to seek what other state entities can provide. So this is an example of CENTEC being unable to say to BBI that because you have this infrastructure, let us make use of it. CENTEC had to go to tender. Possibly, I don't know, BBI might have submitted a bid for that tender, and they may or may not get it. And that is one of the challenges that we're trying to deal with. So CENTEC's strength, as things stand currently, is mainly on the provision of the wireless infrastructure. And that is what we also want to capitalize on. CENTEC is the major provider of signal distribution for radio and television in South Africa. I think, Dr. Mahat, it should be more than 90% of television and radio services in South Africa that are carried by CENTEC. But out of that capability, we can expand it to also provide broadband services. Now, on the issue of the wholesale open access network, honorable members, in our previous presentation, we indicated that there is no intention to create another state-owned enterprise. The wholesale open access network is not a government entity. Is a private sector initiative. It's going to be a private sector run. All what we're saying is that we have observed supply-side challenges in the industry in the sense that small companies cannot operate because they rely on their competitors for access to capacity. So we are introducing this wholesale open access network to intervene in the case of market failure, but it will not be a state-owned company, Chairperson. Now, the way we see the NBN, we don't see the NBN as a monopoly. It's not going to be a very big, massive company, but it will be a reasonable, sizable company to make interventions where there are proven cases of market failure coexisting with the industry. The role of SMMEs in the national broadband network, the NBN is not going to crowd out SMMEs. As things stand now, BBI is preparing to go out to outsource a significant aspects of SA Connect to SMMEs to participate in the rollout of broadband. So there is that requirement that even state entities, when they roll out services, they must also comply with the requirements to empower SMMEs. So we also see this broadband network playing a very big aggregation role because the policy, the current policy says that you must not duplicate infrastructure. Now, that being the case, it means that where there is private sector infrastructure and where there is sufficient competition, the NBN will merely aggregate what exists. So it is clearly not coming in to crowd out the others in there. The private sector will continue to bid for opportunities from wherever angle they come, even if they are issued by the NBN, so they will be there. In terms of who will finance the NBN, our view is that already the entities that are being merged to an extent, their own processes going. These are existing institutions. So you are not creating necessarily a new institution, but you are merely amalgamating what already exists. So funding will continue as it has been normal. We don't want a top-heavy company, but a company that has sharp capacity to aggregate what exists in South Africa so that we don't duplicate. Now, in, lastly from my side, Chairperson, is can we sell Sentec and BBI to the private sector? I think in the first instance, in the case of Sentec, Sentec is a very critical player, as I've indicated, that it carries more than 90% of television and radio signal in South Africa. And our view is that it will not be advisable to take such an entity and sell it to the private sector. Currently, as we have indicated in one presentation, Sentec is owned 16 million by community radio stations that are unable to pay. Now, if Sentec was a private sector company with such a cost pressure, that all these community stations would have been switched off. But because Sentec is a public company, we've been able to engage Sentec to say, let's sit with DOC and find an amicable solution to this challenge that is facing Sentec currently. So there is a benefit in keeping Sentec as a state-owned entity. So, Chairperson, I'll allow my colleagues to add when necessary.
Thank you, Chair. The DG has covered pretty much all of the questions, but I think I need to acknowledge the committee's observation on the lack of time frames on our presentation. We are working now towards finalizing the detailed implementation plan with which we will submit the new mandates to Cabinet. So by the time we go to Cabinet, we would have developed the detailed implementation plans with the timelines associated therewith. There was a question about whether we outsourced the assessment, in which the DG has responded to. Indeed, there was a steering committee and a technical committee which we established, made up of the CEOs and the executives of the department, as well as the other officials of the affected, all SOCs basically in our department. It is through that process that the assessments were conducted, and they were not outsourced. We are also mindful that we could have lost some time in the 2 years that have passed without much visible action. We are now moving with vigor towards implementing this project. It stands out in the APP as one of our commitments, and we are doing everything that we can to make sure that we deliver on those undertakings in the APP. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are we done with responses?
No.
No responses. Are we done? Yeah. Okay, let's hear from members if the responses cover your questions, and also come to second round of questions. A follow-up, actually.
I asked what role there was for the private sector in this. Are you going to give them the business to roll out the networks?
Chairperson, we dealt with that question. Now, let me start with what exists now to show where we are. What we are doing now, BBI is preparing an outsourcing model. Now, the outsourcing model will cover three spheres of private sector entities. First, these are the big companies that own infrastructure. How are we going to utilize the infrastructure that exists currently? To the best of my knowledge, and I speak advisedly, they can explain this. Our understanding is that BBI has already written to the big companies to check what infrastructure exists in the different areas where they want to roll out. The second sphere of engagement will focus on emerging medium-sized companies that are beginning to roll out their own infrastructure. And some of them have worked with USASA. How are we going to integrate those initiatives across the country? The third sphere deals with companies that do not have infrastructure at all, but they are merely looking for opportunities to build infrastructure on our behalf. So they don't own infrastructure of their own, but they are looking for opportunities to be outsourced to build infrastructure. So we've fragmented the outsourcing model in terms of the three spheres so that throughout the value chain, you are able to maximize benefit and, consistent with policy, ensure that where there is infrastructure, there is no duplication. Initially, we thought that can simply be done based on ICASA regulations, interconnection and facilities leasing regulations. But it turns out that the PFMA also kicks in. You know, you also need to undertake some PFMA processes even when you want to list the available infrastructure. And that explains the model and the approach that they are taking to write to companies and check who has infrastructure.
And here also the funding model?
I asked where the money was coming from, that we know that SA Connect is going to cost somewhere in the region. I think you said a couple of weeks ago, it's $60 billion. That can't be funded out of the initial, out of the existing funding model of the SOEs. So there has to be extra funding. Can we please have some idea of how this is going to be costed?
Chairperson, in terms of the model for SA Connect, we're buying services. We are not on the supply side of the market. So we envisage that the supply side is going to come from the private sector. Hence, we are going to the private sector to ask the private sector to come on board. Now, and we buy services from the providers. Now, in terms of the state entities, they will also have to go to the developmental financial institutions for where they may need resources on their own. Now, what we've been able to do, we've facilitated meetings with all the DFIs so that, in particular, BBI can engage with the DFIs where it may need funding. But the bulk of funding for this project, there is no doubt that on the supply side, it has to come from the private sector. The private sector has to go and raise supply side funding. What Treasury is giving us is money to buy services because we can't afford a massive capital outlay for the purposes of the supply side as the state. There is clearly no money to do that. So we need to bring the private sector on board.
Are we done with our question? Are we clear, Coronel? Arun Kida, your hand was up. Okay, followed by Arun Coronel.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification, DG, and thank you also for acknowledging that we have reason to be concerned about what appears to be lack of progress. It really feels like a rehash. And I appreciate the fact that you had a different focus, but I just want to make the point that I was under the impression that that is why the department is structured in a particular way, that you have the SOE oversight directorate and that you have a policy directorate so that the one doesn't sort of assume responsibility up to a point and then has to focus on something else. They can both focus on their core functions. So just to make that point, it is really disappointing, but thank you for acknowledging that. Chairperson, I just want to understand. I hear what the DG has been saying about the PFMA and that you have the PFMA kicks in and that you actually have agencies who have to go out on tender to compete, etc., etc. And that in the process that you actually have, can I say, some obstacles. But I just want to have very clear indication from the department. To what extent will the new envisioned structure circumvent that? And I hope really that we're not going to be faced with legislation where the PFMA is going to be sidetracked. Because the PFMA is a critical piece of legislation that derives from Section 217 of the Constitution, which says that a government must in all its endeavors ensure economic and efficiencies and everything to that extent. So I trust that the department is not going to come with some or other proposal that this body be exempted or whatever, because that would really pose a significant challenge. We already, as it is, face a major problem with state capture. We don't want to open any more avenues for, you know, little small and yana little skeletons, really.
You know, I'm not pursuing my comments further, but what I would like to see, and maybe the department can give that to us, the list of the radio station owing money to Sentech,
and what amounts are due, if we can just have that in writing. Thank you.
Honourable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chair. Just following on from Honourable Killian, can Honourable Killian tell us which part of the state has been captured? Who has captured it? I'm very interested to know. Thank you, Chair. It's on the record, Chair. I'm just interested. Thank you.
No comments. Have we exhausted follow-up questions? Over to you, Dijon.
Thanks, Chairperson. I may be that the latest question was not addressed to us because we'll not be able to answer it. But in terms of the list of radio stations, we'll definitely do that, DDG. In terms of the exemptions, I think it's a fair point that is being made around whether it will get exemptions. It should not get exemptions to the detriment of what needs to be done, you know, in terms of the rollout of broadband in South Africa. So there are no exemptions that are currently being conceived of. The compliance with the law is foregone that it has to happen. It's in the interest of all of us that there is that compliance. Now, in terms of the structure of the department as to how is the department going to be structured, I would suggest that when we come to do our maybe annual report, or quarter four report, I don't know when that will be, we also shed some light in terms of how the department is going to be structured. So we'll be willing to do so, to say that as part of our presentation, either the quarter four or annual report, we also use that opportunity to talk about the structure of the department to in pursuit of all these issues that we have mentioned.
Thank you very much. If we have exhausted all the questions and responses. Thank you very much for the presentation. And we appreciate the fact that you're supposed to be at the SADC conference, but you have prioritized the committee here. And we really appreciate that. And the committee was also invited, but because, you know, the invitation coincides with the committee programs. As you see, we're meeting today, and later on in the afternoon, we're going to have a plenary. So we couldn't attend, and we apologize for that. However, colleagues who will be attending will share with us the documents so that going forward, we move in the same footing with the department. Coming to the issues that were raised by members here, you know, the issue of time frames, it always comes up in every presentation. And we think in every planning there must be a time frame. But almost all the time when the department comes to present, we also, you know, we are aware of the continuous, you know, weakness in terms of the time frames. And it makes our work very difficult to do oversight because we have to hold on, you know, the department on what we have committed ourselves to. And time frames also talks to the capacity, because the capacity we have will tell you about the time frames. Will also determine your time frame, that if we have this amount of capacity, we'll be able to deliver within a quarter or two quarters on and on. But if we don't have the time frame, it's very difficult. And we always raise issues of capacity, because we're trying by all means to follow what the president has said about the utilization over or excessive utilization of consultants. But if we have sufficient capacity, we'll really minimize the usage of consultants. And the issue of cut and paste, as you see, the document that we have here is for 2015. The minister, the Honourable Killian, and other members have referred to. That where I have highlighted here, it is an issue about you know, the time to submit the documents to the committee. We really have a problem, DG. We have to dig, you know, for the report to be presented, you know, on time. And even the time of honorable suggestion, which appears in this document here, almost every member, if I can read verbatim here, was complaining about the late submission of documents. And the reasons are still the same as they were pointed here in 2015. It's either the minister is in cabinet, isn't a plan to sign off. When he's out of cabinet meeting, he's in another meeting, he cannot be reached. You know, so many excuses, and that makes it difficult for us to have time to read the document and also make referral to the previous documents that we have engaged with the department. In short, I think members are talking about the quality of the report. We are trying to be, you know, as cooperative as we can, so that we have a, you know, a harmonious working relationship with the department and entities. If you read this report here, that rationalization report was rejected by the committee. It was not approved. So as they talk about cut and paste, I'm not sure how are they going to, you know, take this one. As they say, it is a cut and paste and it was rejected. The reason why we have the committee report that we always share with the department is to make sure that everyone who's supposed to come and present has sufficient time to prepare and, you know, consider issues that were raised by the committee. Because if you don't do that, ignoring what, I mean, the issues that were raised by the committee, we really feel being undermined that when we prepare, we really don't take into consideration all the issues that were raised by the committee. And that will, you know, necessitate some action moving forward. But we think that for now, we caution you, I think it will be for the last time, that we have such a report of cut and paste, because it's just a waste of time. This is the report of 2015. And I think this one, DJ, you take it very serious of the submission of the report. Okay, and I think for now, we can just say thank you very much for coming here and all the best for the conference that you're going to from this meeting here. And like we said, that those who are going to attend will be doing so on our behalf as a committee, as a department, as a collective. So you can look at the reports and also take us, you know, on board as to the happenings of the conference. Thank you very much. And as we move out, we'll prepare to deal with the minutes and the report as a committee. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to ask one thing. Your comments are very to the point, Chairperson. And I was wondering, the department is coming here to report on the annual report, beginning of October. Chair, can we not also have at that particular time, or maybe sooner, their timelines for this process? And they could have you know, different scenarios. They could say scenario one, the best scenario, and the fallback position of when they want to have this process concluded. And preserve a realistic time frame to us. Don't come with a sort of a thumbsuck type of a thing. We're a realistic program. Otherwise, Chairperson, honestly, today feels like a complete waste that we do not have any further clarity on how this process is going to unfold and by when it is envisaged to be through. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. That's the reason why I say issues of capacity are very important, because they determine the time frame. If you don't have a time frame, it's really difficult for us to deal with the situation of oversight. And we don't want to waste our time so that we experience a fruitless expenditure coming here for nothing, only to be turned back to improve the document. But we think that moving forward, there will be a great improvement. Thank you very much.